Welcome to Everything Pro Wrestling. Everything Pro Wrestling is a show by the fans, for the fans. And here's your host, Conrad Cushman.
Everything Pro Wrestling, it's your boys from the Everything College Basketball Podcast and Facebook group. I'm Josh Burton, letting you all know that if you like the college game, that there's only one spot to come find all you need to know.
Yep, Josh, Peyton, and myself, Tyler, we are the three voices of ECB podcast and Facebook group. Peyton, tell them where they can find us and listen to us at.
Well, Tyler, you can find us on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and all other podcast hosting sites. Also, go join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups like Everything College Basketball.
So if you want everything you need to know about the collegiate game or have a passion for it, there's only one spot that you need to check out on a weekly basis or a daily basis with the Facebook group. That's Everything College Basketball. Now let's get back to Conrad informing you on everything pro wrestling and the workings around it.
Brother.
Many are probably wondering, what time is it? Folks, welcome to Everything Pro Wrestling. Everything Pro Wrestling is a show by the fans, for the fans. And I am your host, Conrad Cushman, and we are back with a retro review for you guys today. And as you can see right above my head here, we are going back to Super Brawl 1998, which was titled Super Brawl 8. I know how to read Roman numerals, but I think more people would search Super Brawl 1998, so that's why the title is like this. If you guys could, make sure you guys join me. I want to hear your thoughts on this pay-per-view. So if you're watching in the live chat, please give me some of your memories of this, memories of some of the competitors, whatever you see fit. Let me know what you guys have going on with that. I would greatly appreciate it. Also, if you guys are just getting in here, do me a favor. Make sure that you guys Harlem kick that like button. That's right. We want to make sure we get into those double digits with the likes today. So any and all help available is greatly appreciated. And last but not least, folks, make sure you guys check out our sponsors. We do have powerslam.tv. If you are listening on the audio version, you'll hear a promotion for them later. Also, check out our friends, Everything College Basketball. And last but not least, check out our good friend, the Hasbro Bookmakers. They are going to also have an ad in here at the end. These guys do tremendous things. Powerslam.tv in the description box. We do have a free giveaway. You get your first month free using the code EPWSHOW. So make sure you guys check out some free independent wrestling on your boy. So I appreciate you guys. And that's the love I'm giving back out for that right now. Gaming Monster 66, what is going on, brother? Good to have you in here. Yes, I sent you a message back on Twitter, brother. So I'm glad to see you in here, man. We got Rob in the house. Let's see. Donnie is also in the live chat right now. Gaming Monster, if you like the content, man, please hit the subscribe button. Anybody is more than welcome to subscribe. But enough of me with the jibba jabba and all the talk. Let's get into WCW Super Brawl 1998. Now, I usually have to give my briefing where I am at the time, and it's very, very, very important to me to kind of remember some of these classic events. Where were you? What were you doing? The year was 1998, fifth grade, man. Hard times, I like to call it. Hard times. School was no fun. You didn't like anything that was going on. All that you had in your life were your sports, your television shows. You might have had those cool finger skateboards at the time. Things like that. We're just living life at that moment, and we're just doing our thing, man. And I remember WCW was a big deal still to a lot of people. I think WCW's biggest glory years are between 1996 and 1998. I really think that those are the years where a lot of people took the focus and put it all onto WCW. And that's where everybody gets these kind of glorified ideas that WCW was so great. They had a good time period, and I agree. I love reviewing these shows because it reminds me of when WCW was good, had a lot of fun to it. And sometimes you go back and watch even some of the pay-per-views from in between this time, and you see huge blunders, misses, things like that. So if you guys have any memories, like I was saying, tell me about them. So let us see, Sick, what is going on? Sick with it in the house. My man Thomas Polster has joined us as well. If you guys are listening on the audio form, hop on the YouTube. We usually record around 8 o'clock every Tuesday. I would love to have you guys in here and get your name mentioned on the podcast. And also, if you're watching this live on YouTube, subscribe to the audio version. Get on Spotify, hit the subscribe button, just type in Everything Pro Wrestling. You guys will find me. I am trying to make some moves within the community here, so please help your brother out. Let's get into this. Retro Review. This is taking place in San Francisco, California at the legendary Cow Palace, this show. WCW Super Brawl 8 was built up huge. Now, if you guys go back in the archives, you will see that I reviewed a lot of shows from 1997. I think I started almost after Super Brawl and I got most of them in there. We talk about what was good, what worked, what didn't work. But go back to that Starrcade show, because to me, that is the catalyst for all of this. I know we had sold out in between in the middle of all of this, but let's eliminate that. Starrcade 1997 was the biggest show for WCW at the time. They had to make a move here. Hulk Hogan versus Sting. Sting had not talked in a year. Sting had not done anything. And what do they build this show around is, will Sting be able to take the World Heavyweight title from Hollywood Hogan? The NWO was an unstoppable force at the time. Yeah, you had people like Luger and them take it away, but Hogan always found a way to get it back. Could Sting be the man to keep Hogan at bay for a while? They do this weird, screwy finish. Bret Hart had just got screwed the previous month in Montreal at the end of 1997, and we get to Starrcade. They do a screwy finish. Nick Patrick fricks up the three count. It looks terrible. It goes to crap. Everybody knows this is one of the worst finishes executed in pro wrestling. It did not work. What does this have to do with Super Brawl 1998? I'll tell you. It has everything to do with Super Brawl 1998 because this is where the rematch was going to occur. The title had kind of been in limbo at this point. Yes, Sting had it. J.J. Dillon took it from him. This was the big rematch to lead to what is going to happen if Hulk Hogan and Sting had to wrestle again. And that's our main event for this show. And we're going to get into everything that takes place in between. I see Mr. Floodwater has joined us as well. If you guys have questions, I'll answer them at the end of the podcast if we got time. So you guys can hold on to some of those. I see some people asking questions. Donnie, every time I hear Hard Times, I think of you. Stop. Hard Times. That NWA song that he was singing on one of our reviews. Let's get into this, guys. We get the intro. And the intro to the Super Brawl pay-per-view in 1998 focuses in on something that's going to become an issue later on. The NWO and Macho Man. Is there dissension in the ranks? The Macho Man had been part of the NWO this whole time, but Macho Man's not feeling it anymore. He's tired of taking orders from Hogan. Be a man, yeah. He's doing a lot of things in here that just seem kind of like he's tired of the NWO. Okay. So is the NWO losing focus? Are they losing power? That's the first thing that was going into my mind watching this. Then you also have Hogan versus Sting. They build up the title match that we talked about already. Good intro. I thought it was very well done. Superb. Your commentary team. We've got Mike Tenay. Love Mike Tenay when he is in this role that he had in WCW, the guy who knew about all the cruiserweights, basically the analysis of the team. He could come in there and tell you, hey, this guy's really good at hitting the Hunakarana. I forgot how he said it, but Mike Tenay always had funny ways of saying things, and he was just like, Juventud Guerrero's been in Mexico for blah, 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 training for this many years. He knew who trained them. He knew everything. He had all the analytics down. Mike Tenay was good in that role. Now we've got Tony Schiavone as the lead commentary guy, does a great job here, and one of my favorites of all time, Bobby the Brain Heenan, also on commentary. They are hyping up the big match, telling everybody what is leading to everything that's going on within this event. Looks really good, right? We get to the first match. It's for a championship. The first contest is for the WCW television title. And we find out that the winner will face Saturn later on. And it is going to be the challenger, Booker T, I can't believe I'm raising the roof on this review. Booker T is coming out. He is on kind of a singles run. Booker T was becoming a big deal at this time, a television champion in the making. Booker T is somebody that you wanted to see. Now, where did Booker T get all this from? I believe Stevie Ray was out injured at the time, and Booker T was trying to make a name for himself still without his brother. Usually in other companies, they may sit you down because your tag partner got injured. Booker T was holding it down for the Harlem Heat, and I thought he did a great job as a singles wrestler. I really got into Booker T during this time period, and he's facing a name from the past that we haven't seen in quite some time. Rick Martel, not the model, just the wrestler, Rick Martel. And I've kind of got a crazy story about this. Rick Martel is the television champion at the time. I believe him and Booker T were having kind of like a back and forth feud over the title. So during this time period, Rick Martel wound up in WCW. And if you guys didn't know, he went away for a little bit, and Rick Martel had the opportunity to go back to the WWF, according to, I believe, Don Callis told this story on the podcast he used to have with Lance Storm. And he told that Don Callis wanted to go to the WWF. Rick Martel got offered more money to go to the WCW. And it was Don Callis' dream to go to the WWF. We know what happened with him. He went on to become the Jackal. He was in there with Kurgan and everybody else. And things didn't work out too well for Don Callis. Rick Martel went over to WCW. He got paid a lot of money, and we didn't see him for a long period of time. So it felt kind of weird to think about, was it worth it for Rick Martel to go to WCW? That's a hindsight thing. That's for people to decide. I had a lot of fun with both of them playing their roles in each company. I would wonder what it would have been like if they came in as a tag team like they were in Canada. I really didn't get to see too much of Don Callis and Rick Martel as a team, but I heard they were pretty good, so it would have been interesting to see what would have happened with them. Now, during this time, a lot of people maybe thought maybe Rick Martel's lost a step since, you know, he was in WWF in 1990-91. Rick Martel was still good during this time period. Damn good. So Rick the Model Martel is representing the television championship very well in this match. During all of this, we see the Flock early on come out. The Flock is Raven's kind of posse, his group. He's out there with Saturn, Itch Boy, aka Billy Kidman, Van Hammer. They had everybody out there. Lodi with his stupid signs. They were just all out there doing their thing, kind of just sitting back, being Raven's Flock. They would just sit in the crowd sometimes and just look like misfits that didn't belong. Good use of characters. I thought it was different to have people sitting in the front row. You gotta think of the revenue loss, though, that they did just to get their characters over. But it was different, so I didn't mind it. The Flock sitting ringside. Martel ends up locking in the Quebec Crab on Booker T. Booker T is struggling, and he finally makes it to the ropes. Booker T's lower back is hurt, and they've been putting on a hellacious match. But these matches were kind of moving quickly. They're bouncing off the ropes, hitting each other, knocking each other down. Classic television title matches. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just type in Arn Anderson for the television title. Any era, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Booker T ends up hitting an axe kick, a spine buster, and goes for a moonsault-like move, and he misses. Martel jumps from the middle rope and eats a Harlem sidekick for the finish. So basically, Rick Martel made a mistake. He took a risk, and he paid for it by eating a Harlem sidekick. Booker T gets the 3-1-2-3. Booker T is your television champion here. After Booker T wins it, we know how this goes. But for this match, I separated the grades from this. Booker T and Rick Martel, I gave a B+ to. But remember what I said about Saturn getting a television title match? He earns it right here. Saturn hits the ring immediately and starts whooping on Booker T, and the ref rings the bell. Saturn throws Martel out, locks in the rings of Saturn on Booker T, and they start the match after he does all of this. Booker T is down. He's defending the television championship against Saturn. Now, I know a lot of you guys may not know who Perry Saturn was. Perry Saturn was a bad boy back in the ECW, WCW days. I thought this guy was really good. Hell, he was good in the WWF when he first came in. But Saturn is someone who I don't think people give enough credit to these days. He was a real innovator in the ring and really good in the ring. He could do things that just surprised me. Some of the things in here actually scare me in all of this. And I got to give a shout out to Mr. Floodwater in the chat and Connor as well. Prince Rockstar joining us as well. And Prince Locke joining us as well. Thank you, guys. Yeah, so Saturn ends up hitting the ring. He's facing Booker T. Now, we start off with many roll-ups. And Saturn was so athletic that when he's rolling through on these roll-ups, Booker T's legs are long. And he's getting all tangled up into the rope. So that wasn't working. So they abandoned that real quick. Afterwards, we see a unique backslide. This is what I'm talking about with Saturn. I noticed this throughout the match. He had lots of moves that were just different. He goes for a backslide, and then instead he opens his legs like a sunset flip and pins Booker T that way. Booker T gets out of it. Afterwards, Booker T's on the outside of the floor. You know how people set up for the Asahi moonsault? They jump up to the middle rope and then do the moonsault backwards flip. Saturn did a Vader bomb onto the floor from the middle ropes. Unique. I don't see people do that anymore. I mean, I think Saturn probably destroyed his knees doing that. But something different. Innovative. Exactly what I was talking about before with Perry Saturn. I'm telling you. Dude is good. So afterwards, these guys go back and forth for a few minutes. Booker T goes to the top rope. My favorite move of Booker T is not the bookend, it's not the spin-a-rooney, and it's not the axe kick. I love the Harlem Hangover. That is one of my favorite moves of all time, where Booker T does the front leg drop and lands right on your face. He goes for it this one, but he misses. Saturn tries to regain the advantage, but Booker T surprises him with a side axe kick. Saturn goes down. He gets the pinfall. 1, 2, 3. Booker T retains the television championship in what I thought was a hell of an opener, that you were combining two matches into one. I thought it was fun, man. They did a real good job with that one. Let me see here. We got the chat talking here. Let me see. Oh, man, we got to go back here. Thomas Poster said, I was 24 at that time, starting my second year in the German Army. I remember watching it because I watched all the WCW pay-per-views, but besides still being pissed about the Starrcade finish, I don't remember much because out of my head. Let's see here. Rob, quote, bro, I do this for the Booker T's and Jeff Jett's. Don't let Russo hear you say that, Rob. And then he also put Jackal. Thomas Poster said, best of seven series with the Pegasus Kid, or a.k.a. he who we shall not speak of, made Booker T a single star and laid the foundation for the five-time world champion, in my opinion. Thomas Poster, you couldn't be more right on that one, brother. Donnie says, quote to Raven, nevermore. Good times, man. Donnie, I figure you would like Raven as that dark character, but Raven was really good in WCW in the beginning. The Flock were basically the filthy animal mall rats. Or excuse me, I said filthy animals, excuse me. They were basically the filthy mall rats. Terrible. The Flock, I can't say that. Saturn and Kronos were fire. That was an ECW tag team, if you guys didn't know. The Eliminators ruled ECW's tag division. Six said, I heard Saturn would give people those hands backstage too. Saturn doesn't look like someone I would mess with still today. I know he's got the tattoo on his face now, but Saturn will probably beat that ass. Good stuff here. PR Nightmare in the house as well. Nelson, what's going on, brother? Good to have you in here joining us. Let's continue on, man. We talked about two matches already. I gave that match a B. I thought it was a little bit less than that one, but it got less time too. So Booker T delivered in these, and I thought Saturn and Rick Martel delivered as well for their roles in this one. Next up, we get a segment. We have Chris Jericho. Wonder whatever happened to this guy, right? Wink face. Chris Jericho is talking about taking Juventud Guerrera's mask from him tonight and exposing his ugly face to everybody. So at this time, Chris Jericho was trying to show everybody that he could take Cruiserweight's mask. He wanted them to put something on the line to challenge for his Cruiserweight championship. Jericho was becoming what I like to call a big deal. Now, during this time, we got Nick Patrick, who was suspended, and a whole WCW review board was going to be checking out everything. J.J. Dillon comes out to confirm Nick Patrick was not suspended anymore, but Nick Patrick was not going to be the referee in the main event tonight, which hurt his feelings. Nick Patrick, you messed up the main event, bro. Why would you think that? Come on. But Nick Patrick couldn't main event the main event. It's cool. They always did these weird segments with J.J. Dillon, like making an announcement like that. Part of the WCW board committee. And he always had rolled up papers in his hands. Why? let's get to our next match. We've got my man La Parca versus the Disco Inferno. Disco Fever. Yeah. Disco Inferno is someone you either love him or you hate him. Disco Inferno was always entertaining to me. I have fun watching him. Same thing with La Parca. I thought La Parca was really good. Hated that he was in the cruiserweight division, because when you look at La Parca, he's a big boy. He's not, I don't think he's a cruiserweight at all. But they always put him in those matches because he could take the move so well. So La Parca ends up coming into the match. He was the chairman at the time, so he'd always play the chair. And La Parca ends up getting tossed onto a chair in this match. Nothing much happened in this. This was a basic match. You're going to see clotheslines, neck breakers, drop kicks, fighting on the outside, people getting thrown into the ring posts, stuff like that. These guys had a basic match. It's Disco Inferno. At the same token here, he hits a nice swinging neck breaker, but how does the match end? Disco Inferno had a new finisher around this time, and it was the Chart Buster. What is that, you may ask? A Stone Cold Stunner, basically, trying to make the other company's move look like, you know? So, Disco Inferno hits the stunner on La Parca, the Chart Buster, and he ends up picking up the victory for the win. I gave this a C+. I thought they did good stuff for what they had at the time. Average match for the most part, but Disco Inferno was, I don't hate him as much as other people. I always think Disco Inferno was a solid worker. He just had kind of that bad gimmick that would catch up to him. Let me see here. Donnie said Lionheart, Chris Jericho. Rob is saying Randy Anderson was the best WCW ref. You damn right. WCW Revenge, baby. He has someone doing the Disco Inferno dance that I was just doing. Thomas Polster said the Dancing Fools with Alex Wright, a funny team. I always liked them as a tag team. I thought they were dope. Let's see here. What Disco lacked in the ring, he more than made up for with charisma. That's right. He believed the gimmick, and I thought it worked very well with what he was doing. Disco Inferno, the main reason I couldn't take WCW seriously at the time. It was that bad, huh, Sick? The Disco Inferno was hurting the feels for the WCW shows. I can't be mad at all for you. Like, I get it. The Disco Inferno is, that gimmick was tough to sit through for anybody. He did all right, though. I didn't mind it. Next up, we get a match between Brad Armstrong and Bill Goldberg. Now, this is during the massive push of Goldberg. At this time, people were starting to connect the dots that they like this dude, and he's someone who's getting pushed. Go back to my Starrcade review. Him and Mongo had a shit match. I don't care what anybody says. There's no other way to put that. It was bad. It was bad. It was a stinker. So this time, they have him paired in the ring with someone who I think is one of the best at putting people over, Brad Armstrong. I wonder what his brother ended up doing. Oh, you didn't know? But Brad Armstrong ended up doing a really good job here for Goldberg. He gets destroyed in minutes. This was the classic Goldberg match. Goldberg's music hits, headbutts the door, comes out with the security. He gets his entrance, gets his fireworks, breathes in the smoke, breathes it out. You want to see a couple power moves, spear, jackhammer, take it home, baby. Bill Goldberg gets the win. That's exactly what this was. Now, grading this is tough. Usually you would give something like this an NA, but I feel like this was a lot of Goldberg matches. So where does this rank? I gave this a B-. I thought Brad Armstrong did a great job putting him over. Goldberg looked intense. This worked compared to that Mongo match. They tried to make the Mongo match competitive, and that was just trash. That's all I can say about it. Brad Armstrong destroyed. I wish Brad Armstrong got a little bit more love in WCW, but you had to ride the Goldberg train. If it was up to Goldberg, he would have lost to Bobby Eaton. You couldn't do that, man. Bill Goldberg, they were trying to make money with this guy. Let's see here. Dang, where's Alex Wright at now? I think he's training. I don't know if he's doing fitness or wrestling, but he's still a training, I believe, in Europe. Alex Wright was the man, though. See, everybody liked Alex Wright. Back in Germany in a wrestling school. Thank you, Thomas Poster. I saw somebody write Oldberg. Rest in peace, Brad Armstrong, underrated performer. I agree with that, Rob. Prince Locke said, William Regal needs to expose Goldberg again. Goldberg 10-second match. You guys summed it up perfectly. Let's get to one of the better matches, I thought, on this card. We had for the Cruiserweight title. So it was Cruiserweight title versus Mask. You have Lionheart Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho was a heel at the time. Real D-bag. Chris Jericho versus Juventud Guerrera. Hoovie. So this is back when Juventud Guerrera had a mask. I know some of you may be too young to remember that, but Juventud Guerrera used to always wear a mask. We never knew what he looked like, and Chris Jericho had threatened to expose him during this time, and he said he was going to expose all the Cruiserweights' faces, and yada, yada, yada. All right, Jericho. So during this, You start off the match. Jericho's just playing the cowardly heel. He doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want to wrestle. Jericho eventually gets knocked out to the floor, and he does a perfectly heel move. I don't know if Eddie got the idea from him or maybe Eddie gave him the idea. Jericho is laid out on the floor, and he's looking up and around to try and get counted out because he doesn't want to lose his title. Brilliant move, but Juventud knows he can't win the championship without getting Jericho back in the ring, winning by pinfall or submission. He had a funny moment here, ha ha ha, but then this started really getting lit up. Like, they started doing some great arm drags, takedowns. Cruiserweight action was one of the best things about WCW during this time. If you don't believe me, you gotta find out about it, because these guys were just flying off the walls. Things that you wouldn't think anything of today, it's because of these guys that we got to see it. So afterwards, Juventud gets into the ring, and they have a nice back and forth. Juventud is trying to figure out what can he do to put Jericho away. Jericho gets knocked down, and he's in perfect position for the 450. Hoovy hits the 450 on Chris Jericho. One, two, three. But right before the three count, Jericho ends up getting his hand on the rope. The bell rings. I can't remember who the ref was. I want to say it was Mickey something. I can't even think of his name now, the referee. But he was on, like, he was a SmackDown ref in 08. He ends up ringing the bell, and then he's like, no, 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 no. Jericho had his hand on the rope. Perfectly way to play Hoovy. Hoovy's looking like, oh, my God, I thought I had this one. And everybody popped for it. Jericho gets his hand on the rope. And afterwards, he goes right after Juventud's leg. He starts attacking it because he is setting him up for what we all think will be the Lion Tamer. So he starts working on him, but Juventud's coming back. He starts getting that babyface comeback. He goes for the Hurricanrana, and Jericho catches him in the walls of Jericho, or the Lion Tamer, we'll say, in the middle of the ring. He puts that knee on the back of his neck. There is nowhere for Juventud to go. He's sitting there. He's fighting. He's fighting. He looks. And he has nowhere to go but to tap out. Juventud Guerrera loses his mask to Chris Jericho. That sucks. You didn't see things like that at the time. And WCW was not thinking back then. Why on earth were they not thinking? You lost so much money in some of these guys by removing their masks. You killed the mystique, and it didn't respect pro wrestling. I don't know the logic behind this. If someone in the chat knows, please tell me in this. I don't get it, man. So we give this a B+. I thought this was really good. I loved even the false finish with Jericho getting the hand on the ropes. And it's really going to bother me if I don't remember who this WCW referee is. So guess what? We're going to the Google machine. Mickey J. Holy crap. I can't believe I couldn't remember that. Mickey J was the referee, I believe, for this one. Hoovy sits there and he has to unmask. Juventud shows his face. He was a young kid during this time. He had the baby face look. I don't think it hurt Hoovy in-ring or anything else like that, but I think it did kill a little bit of the mystique. But Juventud wasn't the only one that this will wind up happening to. We'll talk about that at another time when we have to get to it, because I can go on a big rant about the whole removing masks and why would you do that. Doesn't make sense to me. Next match. Ugh. Oh, we got ourselves a freaking, I don't even know what to call this. We have from former Chicago Bears, Steve Mongo McMichael. He is getting ready to take on Bret Hart's own family member, the British Bulldog, at this point. So, I don't understand this. Like, Mongo McMichael comes out and he does this entrance. I don't understand why Mongo was pushed so hard back then. I get that he was a big name and they had him on commentary, but Mongo just didn't fit the bill that we needed for a WCW, like, top-tier guy. They made this dude the U.S. champion at the time. It just wasn't working for me. So, Mongo comes out with fire, though. He always was intense. That's the one thing you can give him. Like, the dude wanted to be out there. He comes out intense. Bulldog comes out in the usual setup. Bulldog looked like $1 million here. Body was still immaculate. And hopefully the rumors are true that he is going into the WWE Hall of Fame, because he's long, long overdue to be put in that. So Bulldog in this match ends up using the sharpshooter at one point. I thought that was pretty cool that he kind of did a little homage to Bret here. And I know I said homage instead of homage. I'm being a smartass. Bulldog uses the sharpshooter, and oddly enough, that doesn't get the win here. So you're looking for Bulldog to try to set up for his trademark power slam, or Mongo to go for the tombstone. These guys just, I don't know how to call this. Like, they just were in the ring, just kind of hoss fighting, just big dudes knocking each other over, and you're like, this is ugly. And the match ends when Bulldog gets a Fujiwara armbar put in on Steve Mongo McMichael. I just threw my pen. What? A Fujiwara armbar? What the hell is this? The technical prowess of the British Bulldog outsmarted Mongo? This dude was a U.S. champ. Come on, people. Weird way to end it. The referee stops it. Mongo doesn't tap. The ref stops it. And Mongo says he didn't quit. And he is jaw-jacking with the ref. Basically, MFing him. This is BS. How could you do it? Just not good. Not good. I gave this a C-. And that's being kind. I could have went to the D-plus range, but they were trying. They hurt themselves in this. Like I said, they took some big bumps. But, yeah. Yeah.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others, with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
The early 1990s was a great time to be a child. Remember the feeling when you were young, running through the aisle of your local toy store, or wishing for that present under the tree? That feeling is no longer in the past with the unofficial wrestling figure retrospective. It was a period of change for the WWF and also for the figures. Back when everyone was a superstar and became names you'd remember almost 30 years later. So read the book before it pins you 1, 2, 3.
Next match. One of my favorites on this card. The U.S. title match. The current champion at the time was someone who was catching lots of fire. Some would say he was the people's champion of WCW, Diamond Dallas Page. Bang! He's getting ready to defend his United States Championship against one of my favorites at the time, Mr. He Who We Shall Not Speak Of, Chris Benoit. Chris Benoit and DDP, I knew as soon as I saw that this was on this card that they were going to have a banger of a match. And what I liked most about the dynamic of this one was the fact that you could have DDP in one corner and he could hit the diamond cutter out of anywhere. He was like one of the original dudes who was like, you never know when his finisher's coming. Shocks you, pops the crowd, he gets the win. Chris Benoit was the same way, though. If he locked in that crippler crossface, it was over. Like, you didn't know where it was going to come from. So you didn't know who was going to win this one. And I loved the mid-card at this time. We were talking Rick Martel, Perry Saturn, Raven, DDP, Chris Benoit. You had so many good dudes. Jericho and them aren't even in the conversation for this yet. The cruiserweight division was good. WCW had things going on during this time. Foul, what is going on, brother? I appreciate you coming in here. Make sure you guys check out Foul Original Wrestling as well. Foul does great shows all the time. Wednesdays, watch-alongs. Give you a free plug in there, Foul, for joining us. I appreciate you. Let me see here. Thomas Polster is... Hold on here. We're going back real quick before we get into this DDP Chris Benoit. Rob says it was Bischoff's call to remove the luchador mask because he thought facial emotion sold better. You know what else sells? Replica masks. Rob, my boy. 100%. Thomas Poster said at least Mongo was better than LT, but that wasn't hard to do. I thought Lawrence Taylor had a good match with Bam Bam at WrestleMania 11, honestly. Never mind that shit. Here comes Mongo. You're stupid, Donnie. The Rabbit Wolverine and Latino Heat were the best WCW stars for me. Agreed, PR Nightmare. Thomas Post said DDP was one of the greatest overachievers in wrestling, second behind Foley, in my opinion. Big ups for that. Chris Benoit, man, super talented guy. Yeah. Yeah, really good, man. Kind of makes you sad to even talk about this. Like I said, though, this matchup was the diamond cutter versus the crossface. They show respect at the start of the match with the handshake. I like it. They were both kind of baby faces at the time. And that changes real quick. It turns into kind of a heated competition. And that's what I love about it when there's two baby faces wrestling. Yeah, you can start off with the handshake, but then you get in each other's faces. And it's kind of like pushing, shoving, maybe a slap. They get into it. They do their thing. Now, these two also showed a lot of chemistry in this, and it's very hard sometimes to find people who you have that right chemistry with. And I'm going to pause for a second here to get some water. Sorry. So they have this chemistry with each other. You just see it sometimes when there's like a wrist lock on and the guy knows how to get out of it perfectly and it looks great. Benoit had this with so many people. Angle, DDP, Booker T, like it was mentioned earlier by Thomas Poster. Like, you had so many good things that brought this chemistry and cohesiveness to this match that just made it work. Eventually, Chris Benoit is going for some moves. He can't get DDP into the crossface in the middle of the ring because DDP is fighting out of it. He's always getting to the ropes. He's figuring out ways out of everything. And then he finally goes for a backslide on DDP. He's got his arms hooked. And when he goes to start going down, DDP flips over into a diamond cutter. And 1, 2, 3, Benoit is lights out. You could count to the cows come home in the cow palace. Diamond Dallas Page picks up the big win. Right move at this time. Chris Benoit was up there, but you could not put him over DDP, I felt like, in this match. Diamond Dallas Page gets the big win here. Another solid B-plus match, in my opinion, for this card. DDP leaves through the crowd, solidifying what I was speaking of before. Him being the people's champion. Really good stuff here. Not mad at it at all. I thought that Diamond Dallas Page put on a banger of a match with Chris Benoit. And let us get into the next part of this. We get into the Giant. And where is the Giant in all of this? Well, the Giant ate the nastiest jackknife powerbomb in history at Sold Out. If you guys have never seen this, Kevin Nash went to powerbomb the Giant. Athletic dude during the time. He could do drop kicks off the top rope, if you guys didn't know. It was also rumored that he could do a moonsault. I never saw it, but I guess in the power plant he could do moonsaults. And this is the guy who was the Big Show. The Giant was doing everything, but Nash goes for a jackknife powerbomb on him. He's a big dude. Nash drops the Giant right on his neck, and they're selling that the Giant's neck could be broke. He's hurt. He's out. They show highlights of this. This looks brutal. And they said he would not be here tonight, but they said that he would be on Nitro tomorrow. So they're hyping up Monday Night Nitro because this was in the middle of the Monday Night Wars. They had a lot of things to sell and promote during the time period. Not mad at this at all. And I think they were hoping to get a rematch between Kevin Nash and the Giant out of all of this. But Kevin Nash had moved on to other things throughout this time. JPQ, no particular angle in here as well. What is going on, JPQ? If you guys like Stardom, check out No Particular Angle. If you come in, I'm giving a free plug to everybody tonight. I don't care. We get to the No DQ match, and it is the Macho Man. Ooh, yeah. And in his corner, he's got his girl, his baby girl, Miss Elizabeth. Yeah. Elizabeth's in his corner. Oddly enough, he is facing off against Lex Luger, who would eventually be with Miss Elizabeth. In this, Luger had taped up ribs. He comes out. Bobby Heenan calls him an idiot. Why would you expose your injury? But someone's like, well, if he's hurt, I mean, he's got to have his ribs taped up. Heenan says, that's stupid. It's like putting a bullseye mark on you. So Heenan's trying to explain the logic behind it. We start off with brawling into the crowd for this one. Lots and lots of Savage and NWO speculation from the announcers. They're kind of, oh, we don't know what's going on with the Macho Man and the NWO. And if you guys want to know, I think this is where you start seeing the beginnings of the NWO faction looking like they're going to split. And we all know what eventually happened. We had NWO Wolfpack, NWO Hollywood with the black and white. This is the beginnings of it, in my opinion, where they started trying to see who were the bigger stars in the NWO who were going to fit the cool build to go over and start the Wolfpack. But it hasn't taken fruition just yet. Luger ends up getting Savage up in the torture rack, and Miss Elizabeth comes in and rakes Luger's eyes. So weird to think about where they would be like a year or two from this, and just completely different. So afterwards, the NWO attacks Luger and Savage. And, well, they jumped up on the rope, and you figure they were there for Luger. Luger's fighting him off, but Savage helps him immediately. He didn't want the interference in any of this, so Savage helps him fight it off. Hogan even makes his way out there. Luger puts up Savage for the second time in the torture rack. Luger ends up getting the victory. I thought the finish was kind of doo-doo. Like, Savage just helped you, and you kind of snuck him into the torture rack, but maybe he didn't trust the NWO. And Hogan's on the outside bad-mouthing him like, ah, we don't need that jabroni, brother. He don't know what he's doing. He don't want none of this. Yeah, dude, like, come on. That's it, man. Just trash. I don't know. I didn't like this finish. I gave this a C. I thought it was on its way to becoming something good. And if you would have gave it a few more minutes, it could have been, but they went with the NWO finish, but they're telling a story here. Like I was saying, that there's dissension in the NWO. I get it. Luger just took advantage of it. Just something odd, though, you know, that he helped you and Luger's kind of just running over and sneaking him real quick. And what were all the other NWO guys doing? Just standing there, just listening to Hogan like, oh, it's the great Hulk Hogan. What do you have to say, brother? Like, who gives a shit, you know? C for that match. Let's get to the next match. This is for the unified WCW tag titles. So, at the time, they had these new WCW tag belts similar to the ones that we would see later on in 2000. They were a little bit smaller, but the exact same version. And then we also had the old-ass version of the tag belts that I think they took from Hall and Nash because, I don't remember, they weren't defending them. Hall was busy doing some other shit. You know, Hall and Nash had the tag belts, but they didn't defend them because they were single stars too. Just the usual WCW poppycock. So, it's going to be the Steiner Brothers versus the Outsiders. Now, here's the weird thing. They're teasing dissension with the Steiner Brothers as well during this time. If you guys remember, Scott Steiner was being selfish in some of the matches, kind of not tagging Rick in, showing he could do everything. And they were having issues, but those issues appeared to have been cleared up. Things were starting to show, like, ah, it's getting better. they had ideas, and people were like, the Steiner Brothers are back. They're on the same page. They come out to their music. You know, the Steiner line, do-do-do-do. And they're with the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. He comes out with them, and he wasn't the Million Dollar Man. He was just Ted DiBiase. And the Outsiders come out with Dusty Rhodes. So weird to see the American Dream, baby, if you will, as a heel. Dusty comes out with the NWO, but he was wearing that fire red jacket. Heel Dusty was just, it broke your heart when you saw Dusty join the NWO. Just had a memory of that. But they talk about the issues and they focus in on Scott. Scott Steiner is on the outside for this tag match. Rick is on the inside of the ring. He's ready to fight Hall and Nash. He is taking over. Rick gets really hot in the beginning, knocking people down, clothesline. He was the dog-faced gremlin, so he was always barking, running around. And Rick Steiner and Scott Steiner used to have this traditional pose where Rick would kind of run around the ring. Scott would, you know, like crouch down, and Rick would slide in between his legs, barking like a dog. And that was just the Steiner brothers' pose. Like, they were just tough as nails, tough as dogs. They were ready to do this. And during all of this, there was nothing you could say. I mean, the Outsiders were lost. And watching all of this, you remembered how over the Outsiders were. I forgot to even bring this up. Scott Hall, he had the intro with the survey and everything at the time. Are you guys here to see the WCW? Boo! Or did you guys come to see the NWO? Scott Hall was cool as hell back then. He was over. He knew how to get over. And people loved the NWO. So I just wanted to make sure people knew the Outsiders, Scott Hall, the shit was over. Rick Steiner, he does his traditional dog face pose, slides in between the legs, and I think Hall's on the apron, and Scott Steiner looks at him and just nods his head, and Rick doesn't even know what hit him. Scott Steiner, axe handle smashes Rick Steiner. Bro, when I tell you that I remember this as a kid, this shit broke my heart, bro. Because from the time that I was really little, the Steiner brothers were always together, and Scott Steiner pulled this shit right here in a tag title match. When WCW needed them, Scott Steiner turned on his brother. It's not like a tag partner. It was his brother. And he ends up leaving Rick Steiner laying. So during all of this, it's just bad, man. He gets knocked out. They knocked down Ted DiBiase as well. Scott Steiner just walloped him too. And he ends up trying to fight back Rick Steiner a little bit, but he ends up eating the Outsider's edge. And he gets pinned, and 1, 2, 3, in a short match, the Steiner brothers lose this unification match, and the Outsiders are your tag team champions again with Dusty. And Scott Steiner's too sweet in Hall and Nash. The announcers are disgusted. Fans are booing them. They are pissed. They fooled us again. I gave this a C for the match quality. But the overlying storyline to this made sense. And I almost gave this an NA because it happened so fast that you really couldn't get into it. But this was the birth of, as Fowl just said in the chat, the big bad booty daddy, Big Papa Pump, Scott Steiner. He did Rick dirty in this match, man. Hurt my soul. Let's see what we got people in this chat talking about. Let me see here. Don't turn your back on the wolf pack. You might end up in a body bag. Diesel powerbombing Shawn at WrestleMania 11 was bad enough, but Nash powerbombing the Giant was near. Oh, yeah, that was a bad one. NWO Dusty sucked, in my opinion. NWO Dusty was pointless, but I remember Cody saying he cried when his dad joined. I don't know why that just tickled me, Prince. That was funny. Need a little excitement. Snap into a Slim Jim. Ooh, yeah. And the 276th member of the NWO, Big Papa Pump, the genetic freak, Freakzilla. Yeah, Papa Pump, man, he did his thing in this. We got a really crappy uncensored ad. Like, it's a jingle, basically. Somebody wrote it was like, I'm not going to do this justice if you guys go back and watch this, but it was like, chairs, pears, hair, care, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, order WCW uncensored. And I just remember, like, what is this? What? Me and my brother would laugh at that even back then. I just thought it was kind of trash. We're at the main event, folks. We got Michael Buffer out there to make this feel like a big moment. If you know anything about boxing or big match feels, Michael Buffer coming out there and giving you the, for the millions in attendance, or whatever, for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching at home. And I'm not going to do the whole thing, but the let's get ready to rumble. That was a big feeling. I don't even want to know how much they paid him to do those just for the main event. Michael Buffer was getting paid back then to do those, man. Connor, what's up, brother? Let's see here. So, this is for the vacant WCW Championship. We got Hollywood Hogan versus Sting. Sting seemed to be a little bit more chipper in this one. I'm not saying that he was dark, but he wasn't the same character as he was in 97. I feel like that had been lifted off of him once he had talked to J.J. Dillon and called him a coward and everything else leading up to this. Really good stuff. So during this, I just remember all the disappointment, like I said, from Starrcade 97. Just, damn it. They had the moment in front of them and then they just didn't do it the right way. I don't know if they did this to give Hogan another match or what. But Charles Robinson is the referee for this one. Little Nate. Woo! Charles Robinson is down here. And during all of this, he ends up taking a bump. Nick Patrick is the person who comes out. Sting is taking the beat down here. And for once, it looks weird, but Sting is the one hulking up. Not selling any of the punches or the moves. And, you know, he does the, and Sting's beating on his chest and everything else. The Sting of old came out in this match. And Sting is beating down Hogan. And before the Scorpion Death Drop, Hogan even kicks Nick Patrick down. So Sting's got him looking for the finish. And when he's hitting the Scorpion Death Drop, Hogan kicked Nick Patrick to make sure there was no one to make the count. He's sitting there going for the pin. Nobody's there. Who comes out but the NWO? What do you know? And they're all coming up. And Sting is fighting them off left and right. Nobody knows what's happening. The Macho Man Randy Savage comes in, picks up a spray paint can that they have left in the ring, and he clobbers Hogan right across that bald dome. That's right, brother. I could say that. He clobbers him right across his bald head with the spray paint can. Sting is there, and he goes for the pinfall. Nick Patrick is there, and Nick Patrick counts. 1, 2, 3. What do you know? Nick Patrick ain't that bad of a guy. So we get the 3 count in this one. And it was a happy moment. Sting wins the WCW title. The NWO thought they had him there. Savage helps Sting fight off the NWO. Very, very different. Could have been leading to why Sting began to trust Macho Man, perhaps. Trust his friend Luger. Wolfpack? I'm just saying, a lot of this started to go into what some of the problems would be later on. But it was a great moment for that rematch to finally justify Sting getting the WCW title. I don't know how great this did in pay-per-view buys. It doesn't matter. This was signifying where WCW was at this time. They were still on top, going up against the whole Shawn Michaels as part of DX as the champion, getting ready to face Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania 14. This was probably like their last run being on top WCW before the WWF took back over at WrestleMania 14 with Mike Tyson appearing and being on it. Things were starting to change at this point, and I wasn't mad at it. For this Hogan Sting match, I gave it an overall B-. Really good stuff here, in my opinion. I know that they were limited in what they could do, and you knew the NWO run-in was coming, but this was a better match than their Starrcade one, in my opinion. Way better. Way better finish, too. They get the win. Overall, great for this pay-per-view, though. I have to give this a B+. I thought this was a great show, and it doesn't really show because there's some clunkers in here, but I really think that this show deserves a B+ for the good matches. Jericho delivered, Booker T. Rick Martel, Booker T. Perry Saturn, Jericho Juventud delivered. The main event I thought delivered even. You had some good things that went wrong too. Goldberg, Brad Armstrong was good for what it was. Mongo Bulldog was kind of a crap match. DDP and Chris Benoit was a really good match. This wasn't a bad show. I think a B-plus is fair for this. And I know I'm upgrading it a little bit because I feel bad for the Outsiders match and the Macho Man Luger match. I think they deserved a little bit more. But it was storytelling more than anything else for where they were going in the future. And that's something we know now in hindsight. Let us see what the chat is saying here. Ready to Rumble Boxing. He was the boss. Talking about Michael Buffer. I remember when Charlotte called him Little Nature and the crowd was dead for it, laughing my ass off. That's madness. Macho madness, Fowl said. Thomas Poster, the whole situation with Sting from Starrcade on nearly destroyed the Crow gimmick, at least for me. Yeah, I think it destroyed WCW, personally, Thomas. I think it set them on a really bad downward turn for everything else. I'm not repeating that PR nightmare. Not trying to get my videos flagged. Yeah, really interesting things here. I'll kick it to the chat real quick. If you guys got questions or anything, please feel free to throw them at me. And like I said, if you're listening to the audio version of this, I will plug in the commercials at some point in here. I know some people had some questions. I'll answer any type of questions, too. It could be WWE, whatever, AEW. It doesn't matter. The review portion for the Super Brawl is done. And if anybody's got some questions that they want to know, feel free to throw them in there. I'm going to have some water in between all of this. When you're talking on a podcast, man, kills the throat. Kills the throat. Let's see here. I know somebody had a question before. Oh, Rob put up Mickey J. Henson, too. I didn't know that they called him Henson. Definitely should have just stuck with the Mickey J. Rob for that ref's name. WCW 2000 was the worst. I have to go back, Rockstar. I haven't watched any of that in a while. Nobody's made me watch it, so maybe one day we'll get the 2000s. We'll go back to it and see what they could do. Hey, I didn't say the GG version. How was the buzz in school after the event? For me, I remember a lot of people still talking about the NWO being cool. It was kind of like same old same, like when you go into work, like, we're still on top, you know, we're doing our thing. But I think Bischoff knew secretly that he was crapping his pants because he knew Vince was... Once Vince revealed Mike Tyson in January, he knew, like, yo, big trouble's coming. I was always more into the WWF stuff. I'm not going to lie. Even when it was bad, I watched WWF. I live in the Northeast. I'm a WWF kid growing up back then. Like, I couldn't be mad. And to me, now roles have maybe been flipped and reversed. To where I don't support WWF as hard as I used to, but back then, WWF all the way. I thought DX was great. I love Stone Cold, Ken Shamrock, The Rock, the tag team titles. The Outlaws were getting big at this time. Loved them. So, yeah, very different. Prince Lock said WCW 2000 could have been great, but it came off as a parody of 90s WWF. That could be from hiring Vince Russo. Maybe they could have did something a little bit differently. Russo wouldn't come in until later on after this, but I thought that they were booking just fine before. The problem was not telling stories and advancing other people. We talked about Jericho being on this card. You had people like Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Ultimo Dragon. You could have pushed some of those guys to bigger roles, I felt. And they just never did. And I'm surprised that DDP and a couple of these other guys rose up the way they did. Just didn't make sense. PR Nightmare's with me. He said he only watched WWF at the time. And I think he's from the Northeast as well, at least during that time period. Nelson, you got to agree, man. Like, it was way better, in my opinion. There was nothing that was touching it. I thought that the wrestling was better. Yes, the gimmicks were goofy and everything else, but that's what you just grew to expect with them. And maybe it's a regional thing, similar to rap music. Prince Rockstar says Seth Rollins trash segment. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I wasn't a fan of the church sermon this week. What is your favorite WWE pay-per-view ever? Prince Locked asked. It is WrestleMania 17 is my personal favorite. Top to bottom, great card. Even the gimmick battle royal. You will not find a better, more hype pay-per-view. In my opinion, that's one of their better ones. So WrestleMania 17 is my pick. I know it's a cliche kind of answer for podcasters. Thomas Polster said, at the time, WCW was on free TV, WWF on pay-per-view only, so I watched a lot more WCW and could only follow WWF by newsletter. The paper version, of course. That must have been tough back then, man. But WCW had great strategy, too. They weren't Eric Bischoff's no dummy. I think a lot of people don't give him enough credit. He's smart for how he tried to take down WWF. I give him credit. It just, when the money ran out, it was over for that. And once the ratings started to flip and Vince flipped it back on him, he had nowhere to go. And yes, Thomas, he said that was living in Germany. Prince Rockstar said, I watch more WWF than WCW as well. See? There's a pattern to all of this. And that's not to say that it wasn't great. Prince Rockstar said Survivor Series 2002 is one of his. Absolutely. That's a great pay-per-view. And I do plan on doing a retro review of that eventually as well. I thought they did a lot of great pay-per-views in 2002 for the WWE. Let's see here. The Iron Sheik won the Battle Royal because he couldn't flip over the top rope. We didn't know that at the time, though, Prince Locke. We didn't know that. That's what made it great. You had Brother Love in there, Jim Cornette, the Gobbledygooker, Duke the Dumpster Drozzy, Tugboat. It was fun, man. It was good to just see those guys in there. Mean Gene Okerlund, Bobby the Brain Heenan returned. Fun shit, man. That's all that mattered. They really thought that Ready to Rumble movie was going to help them. It was big exposure, though. You didn't think about it like that. You're like, oh, we're going to be in movie theaters and all of our guys are going to be represented. Couldn't blame them for that. Could the story have been better? Yeah. It came off kind of like a C-list movie, but not anyone's fault, though, at the time of that. Tough to say, man. Ready to Rumble. Don't make me review it, boys. Rob said, my dad had TVs in the back room stacked on each other so we would watch simulcast. I was always more of a WWF guy, but WCW was dope. Looking back at it, you started to miss it more now. And that's kind of the beauty. I'm going to end kind of on this point, Rob. I appreciate you giving your thoughts on that. I got to get you on one of these retro reviews. That's the beauty of having AEW back. We kind of just had WWE for so long that I missed the competition a little bit. And that's part of what we get on Wednesday nights now. Do I care about the ratings? I don't give a damn about the ratings. Because it doesn't indicate what's the better show. Ratings go in trends. I thought last week's Dynamite show was great and they lost viewership. I bet you this week it goes up because of how well they promoted this one, though. It's all about the ebbs and flows of everything. You have a bad week, okay. You did decent ratings. Your numbers are going to go down the next week because you had a bad week the week before. It's just part of the TV game. And hopefully they can do a better job of producing content and competing. I think AEW's done a great job. I'm happy with what they've been producing. And I love NXT as well. The Wednesday Night Wars is great. I think it's the best wrestling on TV. I'm surprised more people aren't watching that. I can't believe Raw and SmackDown still beat them in the ratings. How? Why? I don't get it. But all this wrestling's out here for us to consume. And that's what Everything Pro Wrestling is all about. Rob said he loved the Ready to Rumble movie. Don't at me. Yes, that's what wrestling's all about, though. We have options. We're fans. We love it. With that being said, though, guys, I thank you so much for joining me here on Everything Pro Wrestling. Big shout out to everybody who was in the live chat. And to those listening on audio version, thank you. Send me a message on Twitter at EPW Show. Make sure you guys get at me on Twitter. Love it, love it, love it. And I appreciate everybody who came in here. Thank you for joining me. We will be back tomorrow night with an AEW Dynamite review from Atlanta with Cody Rhodes in a steel cage with Wardlow. Tag Team Battle Royal. Jon Moxley versus Jeff Cobb. It's going to be a good one. Make sure you are locked in here to the YouTube channel by hitting that subscribe button and joining us. We are out. Peace.